and pumpkins. Gunpowder. I am gonna use it.
All right, it's Darren Johnson, Campus XM. It's a cold morning in late April, Albany, New York. Check us out on campusxm.com. Get the podcast there. We're almost to the point where we can sell ads on this thing. There's more and more downloads every day. Thank you very much. And also get my book, profmule.com. Go to profmule.com. Get it. It's only $2.99 right now. I'm gonna take it down at the end of May and raise the price and put new book cover art and everything on there. So you better get it now if you like first editions. It's a good story about a professor, an adjunct professor who has to sell drugs. So, come on. How could you not like that book? Okay, so I found $5 in the wash machine. That was my $5 because I had $20, but then I was buying little things here and there. And it was laundered money, you know. So this morning I'm buying a coffee, I'm waiting, and like the trash bag that I can sometimes be, you know, from my humble beginnings, I used a credit card to buy the $1.69 coffee, and the $5 bill I bought a $5 lottery ticket with. So I felt that, hey, this $5 is like found money. And so instead of buying the coffee with the cash and then maybe buying a $3 lottery ticket, I was like, no, let me buy it with the credit card. And because you can't buy lottery tickets with credit cards in New York State. And then I'll buy a $5 ticket. So it's a $1 million hold'em poker and New York Lottery. It's green. And this game can sometimes get confusing. I like the $1 million lotteries, and I'll explain that in a little second. But this game can get confusing. Like one time, I scratched it off, and it looked like they had three queens on this game. And then there were, like, the community cards. And so I looked at them, you know, like, the dealer had two queens and there was one queen in the community cards. So I was like, okay, they have three queens. And then I got, but there was also a king in the community cards, and I got two kings. So I was like, oh, good, I beat it. Let me see what I won. And it said $20,000. And I was like, oh, my God, I won $20,000. I, like, called my wife, and I was all happy. But then I looked more closely. Also in the community deck, there were two fours. So while my hand was three kings, I think it worked out in a way where I had one king and there were two kings maybe in the community or something. I forget what the combination thereof was. But the dealer really had a full house, and I had three of a kind. My three of a kind would have beat the dealer's three of a kind because it was a higher ranking three of a kind. But then the two extra cards made it a full house, and a full house beats any three of a kind. So I didn't win $20,000. And I've kept that ticket as like a reminder of how stupid I can sometimes be. Like, that's kind of dumb. But I picked the $1 million tickets because I feel like with the $1 million tickets, yeah, my odds are still almost impossible to hit it. But at least I might be somewhat in the ballpark if I win a million. And a million would be life-changing. But for the tickets that are like $9 million or the Powerball goes up to like $500 million or more, you know, the odds of winning that are nothing. Yeah, usually they'll find some guy in like Ohio or something that won the $500 million Powerball. But this is in a country of 330 million people, and usually the Powerball, like, that means someone didn't win it for several weeks prior if it gets up to $500 million. So it's, your odds may as well be zero on something like that. But the $1 million, hey, you know, maybe, you know, million, all right, you figure the odds are probably, I think your odds are probably one in, I don't know, 2 million to win the $1 million because the lottery has to get their cut and take their money. So, all right, yeah, that's pretty rare. But if I play like one of these a week and over time, you know, maybe my odds, I start to whittle down the odds to maybe where my odds of winning are like 1 in 50,000 or 1 in 20,000 if I play enough of these. I don't want to become like where I'm playing every day, but buying a $5 ticket here and there, you know, forgive me. I had a friend in high school today he'd be diagnosed with ADD. He was definitely off the wall. He would just want to skip class and, like, go to bowling or go to the arcade, and he would do zany things, you know, and he ended up living in a small town near the hometown I was raised in, and he had kids and, you know, kind of a workaday life. He was working in a dollar store, and I guess he was buying lottery tickets whenever he had extra money, and he did hit one of these $1 million lotteries, and it, you know, because I hear this, I'm not really friends with him anymore, but I hear it through the grapevine. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's finally a good break for that guy. You know, he won $1 million. So I guess after taxes, it's like $600,000 because he's just an average guy. He doesn't have the tax loopholes that a richer person might have. A richer person could figure out a way to minimize the taxes on something like this. But, all right, so he gets $600,000. And the town I was raised in has very affordable real estate prices. I hope he just paid off his house. I don't know what he did with it. But from reports, I heard he was working back in the dollar store a year later. So, I don't know. Hopefully, he didn't do anything crazy like go on a gambling trip and gamble the money. And hopefully, he just paid down his house. And at least he'll have a house for the rest of his life. So, you know, when times are tough, he'll have a house to fall back on. I think that's the ultimate retirement plan. Let me take a sip of this coffee that I just bought while it's still hot. Just a second. All right, so let's scratch off this ticket and see what's going to happen. All right, so I'm going to scratch off the champions cards, the dealers. He or she has two sevens. All right, so that means in the community cards, probably there'll be another seven. So the dealer will have three sevens. But let's just check out the community cards. You can hear a little scratchy sound. There's a two. Jack, seven, as predicted, four, and an eight. Okay, so the dealer has three sevens. That's going to be really tough to beat. In the community cards, there's no chance of getting a flush. There are two hearts, two diamonds, and one club. So there's no chance I can get a flush. There may be a chance, let me see it as straight, four, five, six, seven, eight. Yeah, if I can get a five and a six, I can get a straight. A straight would beat three sevens. So what I really need is either a straight or there's an eight in here and a jack, or three eights or three jacks, and that might do it. So let me scratch off my cards. All right, I have six hands. The first hand, I get a seven also and a five. So I have, it's kind of playing with my mind. Because they have two sevens, but I have, they have three sevens altogether. I only have two. So nothing there. Next hand, a jack and a nine. All right. So I almost a straight seven, eight, nine, jack. That's how they play with your head a little. So I have two jacks. Not good enough. A two and a king. So that's nothing. I have two twos. That's not going to win anything. Another hand, a king and an ace, nothing. Another hand, a king and a queen, nothing. And the last hand, a three and an ace. I don't think this would pan off into anything, no, because an ace is a one, I already have a two, there's a three and a four, but I would need a five. So I lost the New York State Lottery, my $5 down the drain. I could have bought, like, a bagel or something. I could have bought a bag of chips. You know, who knows? It was a gas station. So there goes $5. $5 spent. Ugh, I'll have to start selling ads on this podcast to make up for the $5 lost. So that's life. But then I make the money back. So yesterday, I went on an assignment, and something I haven't done in years and years. There's this farm bureau of sorts in New York State. It's out in western New York, I guess near the Finger Lakes or somewhere around there. It looks pretty far away. But they do stories on farmers, and they look for freelancers in each community. And there was a farmer in my community who they needed a story done on, and they already interviewed him by phone, so they had the story written, but they needed a freelance photographer. So I'm like, so they called me. I guess they found my number on the internet, you know, because I own a newspaper called Campus News, and I live in the town where the farmer was. So they called. I guess they don't want to pay a lot in mileage because they have like a whole contract where they have to pay mileage and such. So they call me and they're like, yeah, we like to hire local journalists to cover these stories that we do. We do statewide stories. And I'm like, all right, you know, I guess I'm 49 years old and I didn't say that, but these are assignments I used to do in my 20s, you know, maybe early 30s. I would do them freelance. And I hadn't really thought about doing anything like that, but I still have an SLR camera, SLR digital Nikon camera, and people, you know, don't have those nowadays. And I had Monday free because it was, my daughter had a holiday from college and I didn't have to drive her anywhere. So I was like, all right, I guess I could, sure, why not? And I was like, I have the camera, I know how to snap photos. I looked at some of the examples on their website of other stories they'd done. I could definitely shoot at the level that they had on that website. They weren't looking for anything complicated. And the thing is, they said, you know, just shoot 10 shots, should take a half hour, and that's it, you know, and just get us the raw images. You don't have to Photoshop them or anything. We'll worry about that. So I was like, all right, that's fine by me. And they said, we'll pay you $100 and plus some minor expenses and such. So it's going to come to like $113 or something like that. So I was like, well, why not? For a half hour, $100, yeah, sure, I'll take it. It's right in my neighborhood, gets me out of the house for a few minutes. I'll go do that. So they gave me the farmer's number and, you know, went back and forth, and they couldn't meet at first, and then go up to his place. And there's 1,000 cows on this property. It's like a couple miles from my house, but it's off a road I never go on. So I didn't know this whole farm existed. And there's like 1,000 cows, and they gave me a shoot sheet where I had to take a picture of him in front of his sign and a picture of him with some seeds and some cows in the background. And I think I got the shots, you know, they're fine. And maybe I'll post a picture of a cow on the site that hosts this this podcast, so you can find it there. If you go to iTunes, you can click on like the actual episode and then click on the site link and it'll take you to the picture of the cow. So I'll put that there. So I go, and you know, at one point we're driving around in his truck, and there's a dead cow all gnarled on the ground, like its guts hanging out or something. It must have died giving birth or something like that. I don't know. But didn't look good. And but we just, you know, passed it by, and I guess stuff like that happens on a farm. If you have 1,000 cows, one's gonna kinda die, I guess. And I don't know. I get all these questions after from like my daughter or my wife, like, were they milk cows or were they I don't know what kind of cow. I assume that they're both. You know, maybe they give you milk and then they cart them off and then they're hamburgers later on. But, you know, you have to, that's the reality. We all, for those of us who eat meat, they have to come from somewhere. So all these cows were in this big barn and they eat, and that's about their whole life, eat and pee and crap. And that's about it. And you know, they hook a machine to them and get some milk out of them now and then. And that's their whole existence. So I got the shots on the farm. It was a nice enough guy and nothing to worry about. But yeah, so I made a little money just because at one point in my life I was a journalist. And then I start to think, well, maybe I could do this more often. You know, maybe there's something I can do, like, to, because if I got like two little gigs that were a half hour each a day for $100 each, that would be kind of nice. You know, I'm earning $200 for an hour's work, and I could just get out a little bit, you know, get a cup of coffee too, and get $1,000 a week just for snapping pictures and maybe writing little stories or something. That would be good. Actually, the photography part is way easier. In the past, I used to have to write the stories too. So I'd write the story and do the photos. But this Farm Bureau says they hire separate people for that. So that's fine by me. I don't care. Photography is way easier than writing. And I don't care what you people say. Photography is way easier. And I can snap capable photos. I know angles. I have a camera that's capable. So, yeah, way easier. Yeah, so maybe I can get, like, little gigs like that. You know, 100 bucks here, 100 bucks there. Plus, I have my campus news gig. And, I don't know, start a local paper and just groove with the world. And then I realize I'm 49 years old. And how much time do I have left? This is stuff I was doing and should have maybe fostered a little bit more in my 20s and early 30s. But how much time is left? I don't know. So the weather's turning and it's turning better. And I'm in a better mood. It puts me in a better mood. But I was doing an interview with a phone interview for a story I'm writing on a guy who's good at chess. And I did it out in my car because, you know, I'm in my car now. And I have, like, this whole recording set up in my car. So I figured I wouldn't have to take notes if I did the interview in my car. And that's good because his English was very, you know, broken. And I'm glad I recorded it. I can just listen back to it and turn, get his exact quotes in the right way, you know. Now, as a journalist, there is kind of an unwritten rule that if someone has grammatical mistakes in their speaking, when you quote them, you should fix their grammatical mistakes. You don't make them out to be, putting a grammatical mistake is an insult if you're quoting dialogue from someone. So you do fix it up. That's why it seems like when you read the story of, you know, Kobe Bryant scoring, you know, well, maybe Kobe Bryant's a little more polished, but some guy that isn't Kobe Bryant scoring 40 points in a basketball game, and you see it on TV, it doesn't sound nearly the same as the quote they put in the paper. That's because the quotes, you're not wrong if you fix up a quote grammatically. You are wrong if you fix its, message, you know, or if you leave out something important, you know. If you leave out a key thing and you misquote the person, that's wrong. But if you're just fixing their grammar slightly, it's fine. So I was interviewing him in the car and I had the recording set up. So I just recorded it and I'm watching out my window at my house and I'm noticing bees start to, you know, go around because it's warmer out now, go around the house. And I'm like, oh Christ, it reminded me what happened last year. Last year, we went on vacation, and we came back, and there were like 100 bees dead in my, or no, some were still crawling on the window, but most were dead in my daughter's room, and some were still crawling on the window. And we're like, oh, crap. So I shut the door. I'm like, what the frig? And I hate bees, you know, but these weren't, I guess there's two types of bees, and these were the more mellow bees. They weren't like the killer African swarm bees that they try to scare you about. They weren't wasps or hornets. So let me take another sip. So I inspect the room, and I'm like, where are these bees coming from? And I think they were crawling, I thought they were crawling from outside, along some edge of the window, there was like a little tunnel in the window, and through that tunnel and into the room. And then once they got in the room, I guess bees die if they don't get to their hive in every, you know, at least once every 24, 48 hours or something, a bee will die. So the bees were dying. They expend so much energy that they need to get their honey or whatever they need to get. So most of the bees were dead. Those that were remaining were very weakened. Get the shop vac and vacuum them up, and that's about it. So I assumed it was that, and I blocked a little hole that was from, like, there was, like, this little ledge, because the windows are the kind that they kind of stay up and they lock, and there's, like, a little tunnel that the bees could have gone through. So I kind of blocked that off and thought, okay, that's that. A week or so goes by, and then we start to hear noises in above the ceiling of my daughter's room. And we're like, this is interesting. So it started to sound really gruesome, like a swarm, you know, really gruesome noises. And we're like, shit, the bees somehow got in the house. So there's an attic above my daughter's room, and there's insulation above it. And so I climb up the ladder into this attic that I almost never go into because it's pretty useless. You know, what am I going to do with this attic? So it's a pretty useless attic. And its only purpose is to have insulation. And I climb up a ladder. I hate heights, but I look in there. There's no really way to walk around there because it's all insulation. I wouldn't know if I was stepping on a floorboard or not. And don't see any bees. I'm like, there's no bees in here. I flash the flashlight everywhere. There's no bees. Where are these bees? So they die down a little bit and forget about it. I go outside and I get like that wasp and hornet spray, the one that shoots 20 feet. But from the ground level, it's not really hitting. So I have to go on kind of my porch and get some more, a little more height. So I start spraying where the bees are going, where I think the bees are going into the house. And I spray it with this like foamy stuff, but then the wind blows and it blows it all right back in my face, all this bee and wasp stuff. So, you know, I'm like, all right, now am I gonna roll over on my back with my feet in the air, like the bug on the commercial? You know, what's going on here? So I have to wipe all that off, all the bee and stuff. But I was like, I bought like 3-4 cans of it. And other people must have been having the problem because it was hard to find it. The stores were pretty much out of it. So I eventually, like the third or fourth store that I went to, they had some left. And they should just charge more for it because it was pretty cheap. It was only like $3 or $4 a can. They should charge like $10 a can, then they won't run out. But so I spray it, and there's a big pile of foam where the bees are probably going in. I'm like, all right, this should do it. You know, job well done, like Laurel and Hardy, you know. There, you know, job well done. And rub your hands together and slap your hands together and you're done. There you go. And for a while it's a little quiet. And then a day later, we're hearing like it's an angry swarm now. And maybe they feel like they're trapped in their little spot. So again, there's, you know, we shut the door and the room is filled with bees. And like, how are they getting in the house? I didn't see any opening whatsoever. I don't know how they were getting in. I thought I blocked it. The room was filled with bees. So I go on YouTube and I start looking at bees in the walls. And there's like these huge honeycombs that are the size of, I don't know, like 20 feet wide and 10 feet tall. Like these walls that have like huge honeycombs of bees in them. I'm like, do I have this? Is this what's in my wall? A whole honeycomb, like a whole family of, you know, many generations of bees. And online they say you have to hire a beekeeper and they'll come in with like a special smoke and they'll lead the bees away. And you know, it was like this big complicated thing. It's like, I don't have money for this. You know, what am I going to do? So, you know, inertia, you think like, all right, I don't know what to do. Wait a couple days. And the bees, I guess they were in the ceiling. And one of them must have burrowed through, or their honey was leaking off the honeycomb and it created a soft spot. And then they started coming through a little hole in the ceiling. They made a hole. And now they all were coming through here. And so I poked at the hole, and then like all these bees started falling out of the hole, but they were alive and they were buzzing. And I had the window open so that they could fly out the window. But I wasn't sticking around there because once they hone in on you, who knows, you know, could be, you know, bees attack and I'd be running. So shut the door and say, shoot. Freaking bees. So, put on like gloves and I put on a hat and put on long sleeve shirts and all kinds of things. And I bum rush into the room with the bees. And I have my wasp spray and I stick it into the hole. I know you're not supposed to do this, but I stick it into the hole that they'd come through and spray that foam all in there. Spray the foam all wherever the bees are. And spray it, and then whatever bees are still like in the room, I suck them up with the little power vac, and they're all in there squirming. I could see them through the glass on the power vac, and you know, that was a Terminator. You know, while the bees are falling, I'm like making sure not to step on them, and it's just like it's mayhem. And so the winter comes, you know, and the buzzing stopped, and I must have killed him. Must have did the trick. But and I covered up the hole with tape. Like I had, the hole wasn't that big, so I covered it with like just some mailing packing tape, you know, and that was it. So I cover up the hole, and winter comes, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm gonna have to deal with this sooner or later. But it's winter, so you get depressed, and winter comes, and then I see the bee outside. It's springtime, and I see the bee. I'm like, oh shit, those guys are gonna wake up or something. I better go in there. So the other day, I go into the hole and I tear at it and I make it a bigger hole, about the size of a fist, and on the ceiling. And you know, they had definitely softened it. And I have gloves on and I put on a mask. I ordered a ski mask off of eBay, and it was like $1 ski mask. I ordered it over the winter so that I could do the bees. And I bought some special bee powder that kills bees and a special pump that was $6 that that pushes the bee powder, because you can't just throw bee powder. You have to have a special pump that pumps it like a turkey baster almost. I guess I could have used a turkey baster. But yeah, you got to use the pump and pump it through. So I made the hole bigger and I pulled out the honeycombs, and they weren't nearly what I saw on YouTube. There were, you know, maybe about a foot's worth of honeycombs, and they were all dried out and there was a lot of dead bees in them. A lot of the honeycombs looked like they were filled, so maybe more bees were going to be reproduced, but they had like filling in them. I pulled them out. It was rather disgusting. It reached my hand all the way in. What it turned out is the bees found a little valley near, in between the ceiling, a couple of boards, and the insulation. They didn't get above the insulation, and they didn't get to either side of the board, and so they just found a little 1 foot little area that they could build a honeycomb. So pulled all that out as best I could, got everything. The bees were dead. They were on the floor, vacuumed that up, and then I used a little pump and put the bee powder anywhere where they could be in case they do come back. And the bee powder's all in there. And now it was a bigger hole, so I just put like a poster over it, and I'm going to have to like fix it and respackle it and things like that. Something I really am not that good at, but I'll have to watch a YouTube video, yet another YouTube video, and figure out how to fix that hole in the ceiling, and then it'll be all as good as new. I would put a mirror on the ceiling, but it's my daughter's room, and I don't want to send the wrong message. But yes, get that all. I'll put even more bee powder in when I do the next round, but I think job done. So there's that. The hole where they came in from the outside is like 100 feet up, and I hate heights, and I don't have a ladder that tall anyway. Hopefully they don't find that hole again, but I might have to get a big ladder and see where that hole is and maybe stick something there. But that's it. Home ownership. It's what you got to do. It felt good after to get them out of the house. It's like having a beehive in your house is haunting. It like haunts you. It's like, when are they going to come back? And now that it's out, you can breathe a little easier. So in life, if you have a lot of anxiety is caused by avoidance. And don't avoid things if you can. If you have something that's nagging at you, try to, as hard as it can be, and sometimes anxiety can paralyze you and you become, you know, you suffer from inertia and you can't move, but then the anxiety gets worse. Sometimes just deal with it and, you know, put on some pink rubber gloves and a ski mask you got from eBay and pull out that beehive and then put some poison in there so that the problem doesn't come back. All right. Well, that's that. And, oh, yeah, and the bee poison is supposed to be, like, just for bees. That's why it's a powder, so it won't, like, pollute the house or whatever. So, there you go. This is Drive Time Podcast. You're listening to it. It's on Campus XM, so you can find older podcasts there. Go on iTunes. Get my book. It's only $2.99. It's not going to be $2.99 forever. Darren Johnson, Prof. Mule. Go on Amazon, and you can read it on any device. You can read it on a Kindle. You can read it on a phone. You can read it on a computer. You can do whatever you want. So get it, because I'm going to raise the price on June 1. Get it now. $2.99, Prof. Mule. All right, this is Campus XM, Darren Johnson. Checking out. Bye.